Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Come on in. Come on in. There. The Eerie House. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here with
Dave Binkley from Weird is Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here along with
This is Sue Demi, just walking through the atmosphere, joining these gentlemen. And
take another step closer to the take another step closer to your mic, CW.
One more step.
Or smack it one. And while CW is wrangling with her microphone, we want to welcome our very, very special guest, artist Bradley Beard.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Oh, man. We're always having fun here at Eerie House. We've got a little radio program. We'll play a little later on. But we wanted you to visit with us. All of us, we love your artwork. We love what you're doing. And learn a little bit more about you and what you've done and what you're going to be doing going forward.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, man. It's great to be back on again. And since you were the first... You know, my first interview, you know, we can kind of rehash some of the past 6 years and talk about some cool stuff.
Yeah. We were chatting a little bit as we were preparing to come on the air live, and we were reminiscing a little bit. I remember when I first saw Bradley's work on the internet, he had done a couple likenesses of horror hosts, and I was working a little bit closer with the Horror Host Hall of Fame at the time, working on the Creepy Castle, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to get to know this guy, and his work needs to be seen. And since I had the ability to reach a lot of horror hosts, it was great. And then
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm totally new to your art, but I think it's absolutely sensational. It's just wonderful.
Thank you. I enjoy doing it.
And I'll tell you,
the blast creating it.
I'll tell you one more thing too. That when we have our photos done by you, that's an accomplishment as a horror host.
Seriously, you've become a benchmark for like the new people that are just starting out on the internet. When you get to do their caricature, it's like a feeling of belonging and a feeling of accomplishment and recognition. And that's all because
of you,
sir.
Well, you know, it's funny because I've drawn way over 400 hosts. I don't even know the exact number, but that's why I did last year. When I re-ran the 13 Months of Horror, you know, a lot of people really enjoyed it, and a lot of people didn't get to enjoy it the first time around. So for the 5th anniversary, you know, I ran it again. But at the end, that's when I did 2 months of new fears till New Year's. And I did all, you know, newer hosts, some classic hosts and that I didn't get to the first time around. And the newer hosts, they were so appreciative, and they just dug it so much. It was a lot of fun to do. So, you know, and my work, again, it's evolved. I had a little more time to develop, you know, the portraits and everything. So you can see it was really something I enjoyed doing and had a lot of fun with.
One thing I think that really works for you is that your style is so distinctive. I mean, nobody's done quite what you've done, especially for the horror host. Sure, I can speak for many to say how appreciative they are. It's a style. When you see it, you go, yep, that's Brad Beard.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, that's the thing that's the hardest part as an artist is developing a style. And, you know, you've seen my work. I mean, when I was younger, I was all over the place. I didn't have one specific style. And when I kind of landed on this, I didn't even realize it at first. Everybody around me is like, oh, my God, Brad, that's your style. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, my mentor, my teacher told me, oh, Brad, you're going to get recognized for the style. I said, Dan, I'm not doing this anymore. Well, you know, needless to say, now it is my style. And had to eat my words several times. And but, you know, now I enjoy it. Now it's become fun to see how far I can expand it and kind of try to, you know, take it a little bit beyond what I did before. I still kind of want to go back and do a little more, pull it back a little more minimalistically sometimes. But I do have a new piece I'm going to release on Halloween. And I'll tell you, I got an Alice Cooper piece. I've never drawn Alice before.
Wow.
Alice will be making a debut on Halloween. Got to have something for Halloween anyway, you know. So
very appropriate. Very appropriate.
Yeah, I thought so. Exactly, yeah.
Oh, the online audience says, first of all, Gar says hello to you, blah, blah. And also, Fogbane says, 13 months of horror host. I believe that's one of your pieces.
Which one?
It is the 13 months
That's the whole, that's the whole shebang. That's like 421 pieces, yes.
Fox Jane is simply amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
He liked the new Fears Till New Year's replay as well.
Hey, by the way, since Gar is there, I want to say hello to Gar. I miss you, and I wish you could be here. You know, Gar was one of the first hosts that early hosts that I did too. And, you know, I got to know him a little bit, and we kind of have the same, you know, love for the 1966 Batman. And so, you know, just, hey, Gar, hope you're doing well, man. Staying safe and healthy.
He is. He's on Friday nights, he's here with us. Just that on Saturday nights, he does a show. So he's actually preparing for his show right now as he's in the chat with us.
Ah, cool. Okay.
Yeah, one of the few guys that does it live, Brad. He's out there doing it live.
I know, that's so great. And he's got a great show that's a family-friendly show, and it's just, you know, I got a lot of respect for Gar. So, you know, I had a lot of fun doing his portrait, too. So.
Yep. One of our faves, and there's like a slideshow when people log in to listen live. And we very often put our likenesses that you created for us there because it's just fun. It ties everything together. Or when I do the comic book cover type ads like I did for your show tonight, it's great to put those right in the little circle there. And I imagine that Gar wants to talk to you.
You know, you should never be too liberal with what you ask for. Blah, blah, it is I.
It's good to hear
your
voice,
there,
man.
Mr. Bidley Bradley. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm up to my elbows in grease paint and invisible monkeys. It's fun.
nice.
Yes.
Brad, what age were you, or at what point in your life were you when you realized that you'd like to do more with art than just for your own gratification, you know, your own amusement?
Well, I can't remember the exact. Well, the thing that, you know, that I've talked about before was when I was a kid and I walked into the grocery store with my mom and I went to the magazine rack and I saw this amazing Famous Monsters of Filmland number 103 with the Basil Gogos, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon cover. And I remember I lifted it up and I was like, what is this? And I saw the word Gogos on there and I just thought, what is a Gogos? I didn't even know artists signed their work at that time. And then I picked up the magazine and, you know, I realized, you know, and it just, that was the day that I realized that's what I want to do. And I don't know if that was the best choice I could have made, but you know, cause it's a hard road as an artist. I mean, we all know, you know, it's not, don't say starving artist for, you know, nothing, but, I enjoy what I do, and more than anything, it's to be able to put stuff out for people to see. You know, I appreciate my fans, everybody out there that enjoys my work. I do all this for you, like the 13 months. I did it for, you know, the people to enjoy and just to have something visually that's different from anything that had ever been done before. And, you know, so, but yeah, that was the day, and you know, when I got to when I finally got to see Bernie Wrightson's Frankenstein work, that was another milestone for me. And being able to meet both of them later in life and to have them appreciate my work was one of the greatest, you know, moments and compliments I could ever have as an artist as well.
Did you ever run across Gene Colong, the artist for Dracula?
Yeah, I know. He's another one. I really enjoyed his work a lot when I was a kid growing up. All the you know, classic comic artists, I mean, I just, all of them. I mean, there's so many. It'd be so hard to name everybody that's been an influence. But, you know, I'm like a sponge. I absorb a little bit from everybody and then kind of made it my own, you know.
Yeah, he also did Howard the Duck, which was fun.
Oh, I love the original Howard the Ducks. Yes, yes.
Those were a lot of fun. I think maybe comic books and the Monster Magazine and or the Monster Magazines did it for a lot of us. I remember not only those great covers by Basil Gogos, but then reading those Warren magazines leads you to, oh, who's this Frank Frazetta guy? Oh, I thought I saw his work on an album cover. You know what I mean? And then you start discovering all these great fantasy artists.
It's true. It's true. Frank and Ken Kelly and, oh, my God. You know, the Brothers Hildebrand as well. Yes, big fan of them. Yes. Yeah, they did some amazing stuff back in the day.
Don't forget Boris Vallejo.
Oh, yes. Boris, too. Yep. Yeah, it's all great stuff. And you know, it's all been an influence on me. And, you know, on my early work, you know, I was a photorealist, and I'd put in, you know, 80 to 100 hours on a piece. So, you know, it's kind of nice now to be able to have this minimalistic style so I don't have to put as much time in. But it was that work that helped me develop my eye and get me to the point to where, you know, now I've developed this style that is recognizably mine, which is kind of cool.
It's way cool. Speaking of, you know, like, and you started, of course, doing all these likenesses of horror hosts. And speaking of which, I'm going to take this as a prime opportunity to spring another little surprise on our listening audience, because a mutual friend, Lord Bloodraw, asked me to say hello to you today, Brad, because he knew you were coming on the show.
Nice.
As we were making an agreement for him to join us here on Erie House Radio on November 6th. So how wonderful is that to have yourself, a great artist, before Halloween week, and Lord Bloodraw is going to be joining us. He's one of the few people out there hosting old-time radio like Dave, myself, Gar, and CW are doing.
Well, you know, let me tell you something. Frank, a.k.a. Lord Bloodraw,
yep.
He was the first horror host that I met in person. And I met him while I was doing the 13 Months of Horror. I went to the Monster Palooza festival that year, and I had to get a few portraits ahead that week. I mean, it was just such an insane schedule. I know I've talked to people about it before. You know, I was sleeping 1 to 3 hours a night, and my life was intense chaos and everything. But I had scrounged up enough time. I worked ahead enough that I was able to go one day to the Monster Palooza, and that's where I met Lord Bloodraw, and just had a great time with him. It was a great day, and that was the day that I got to meet Basil, and so it was a very memorable day. So I have a lot of fond memories with him of that day.
Special things always seem to happen at those trade shows.
They do.
We have a big one here in Ohio that Dave and I like to frequent called Ghoularty Fest, named after, of course, the great Cleveland horror host Ghoularty. And it's a lot of fun. It's the big show in terms of family friendly type horror hosts. There's another venue that runs in our area, but it's rough around the edges, let's just say, in terms of family friendliness. It's a nice show. It's a great show, but you know what I mean? I remember taking my son there, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not taking him to this no more.
Short-lived. Okay.
A little rough.
I'd love to go to the Ghoularty Fest, though. That'd be awesome. Might have to plan that in the future someday.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, let us know, because we would love to, you know, shake your hand and meet you in person.
Well, you know, I do live in the Midwest now, so, you know, with COVID, we made a big move last year, and so I live in the Midwest, so that's always a possibility now.
I'm an hour 15 from broadcast, so I'm going to take off. Great to talk with all of you. Have a great show.
Gargle
for the leg.
Have a great leg. Have a great show tonight.
Ow!
Yep. He broke his leg.
Blah, blah.
Oops.
Oops.
Oh, my
goodness. Gar's show starts right after we're done at 8 p.m. Eastern, at least the live portion of our show. Sometimes we hang around a bit afterwards and chat a bit offline. It's recorded for people who want to listen in the archives, but the live show wraps up at 8, and at that point, you can head on over to Twitch and listen to Gar the Ghoul on Horrible Horror, starring Gar the Ghoul.
Was it my imagination, but at one point you were doing a painting a day?
For the 13 months, yeah, I was doing a piece a day. That's when, you know, basically what happened was, you know, it was October of 2014, and I started putting up a piece every day for the month of October, and then two pieces a day for the last 13 days. And I remember, Professor Griffin started following my work, and Scott Essman started following my work. And I got, you know, some people of renown following my work. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. So, you know,
yeah.
The rest of history, I kept
ran
it,
into all the right people.
Well, the thing was, I was like, you know, how am I going to fill an entire year with personalities? And then when I got into the horror host, community and the horror host world, it just became like, wow, I've got way more than enough, you know, people to fill the entire year. And, you know, it's kind of cool because now it's become something that's kind of iconic. And, you know, hopefully after I'm gone, it'll even be more iconic and, you know, it'll be around for people for generations to be able to, you know, look back on the genre and realize what a rich history it really has.
That's an amazing point. You know, starting with, you know, the early silence, you had these pioneers of special effects, like George Millais. CW probably knows how to pronounce that. I know. It is Millais.
It is Millais.
An absolute genius for his day. And, you know, the fantastic world of films really does have that rich history you mentioned.
Well, it does. But, you know, the horror host, the more I've, you know, got into the horror host world, there's a lot of hosts that I haven't even done from the classic days. There's some horror hosts in Hawaii, by the way. There was a Vampira in Hawaii back in the 50s. Did you know that?
I did not.
There was a horror host in Honolulu named, appropriately enough, The Beard. I haven't drawn him yet, but he's definitely on my list. And, you know, I plan on, you know, it's one of these things. I don't have a lot of time nowadays because I am so busy, but I do plan on revisiting it. Again, I want to do some of the even newer hosts and want to do some of the classic hosts. And, you know, so there's some that are really kind of lost to time, which is sad because
yes.
I love to draw them all, especially the, you know, the classic golden age hosts, you know.
Well,
I'm sure
my former partner can dig them up. He's a bit of a historian, and it's funny how periodically people unearth yet another host that, you know, was largely unknown to the rest of the country, maybe known in their local area, that finally emerges. And
it's true. It's true. And you know, it's kind of neat because, like, with Tarantula Ghoul, when I discovered her, there was very little information on the internet about her. And I ended up, you know, doing some research, and I reached out to her family and ended up becoming, you know, friends with her two sons. And, you know, now people are starting to remember some of these hosts. So, you know, in some maybe small way, I've kind of, you know, created little history for people to, you know, be able to go and dig up a little more information, you know.
Well, I think it may be more than a small way, because it was your interest that, you know, we got the picture, and the picture draws interest, and people say, well, who is this or who was that? And, you know, you could have been very instrumental in bringing all that information to light, even though you didn't originally have all that information.
That is true. Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you. It's just, sir.
Thank you.
Well, it's so much fun, and you know, I enjoy it so much. And for me, I'm a character artist. I love to draw characters. But what I've found I really enjoy is, you know, I've drawn Frankenstein. I've drawn them all, but you know, a million people have drawn Frankenstein. But when you get into like the horror hosts, a lot of them, I don't know if they've ever been drawn or they've only been drawn a few times. So it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of being a pioneer in a way artistically. Then I'm creating portraits that there's not a lot of, you know, people out there that have, you know. So it's unique. It's different.
That it is,
yeah.
And I like too, in the same way, with not just the horror host, but the monsters that you've drawn. You know, not every as you mentioned, everybody draws Frankenstein, but does everybody draw the Metaluna mutant from this island Earth? Does everyone draw?
Oh yeah,
indeed. You know, the Man Who Laughs. Does everybody draw some of these great classics? The many adaptations of Lon Chaney. Maybe him more so, because you got guys like Go-Go Straw and those guys, but
yes,
that's what it is.
You did Chester Wolf, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Out of Alaska,
yes, he is. He was very flattered that I did it. He was pretty blown away that I did it, actually, and that I knew who he was. Yep, I did Chester.
Wow. I didn't know they had anything in Alaska besides, I don't know, polar bears.
Icebergs,
Icebergs, yeah.
You know, it's funny about horror hosting in and of itself. The phenomenon started, you know, in the 50s, early stages of television, boosted by the release of the shock packages, you know what I mean? But that kind of storytelling is even preceded by television. You had the comic books like EC Comics and others with hosted stories. You had those great radio hosts. We're going to hear one a little bit later on from Inner Sanctum Mysteries, one of the best. You had the spook shows. Those would probably be the most difficult to document, because a lot of these were small-time flash-in-the-pan guys that would show up at a theater, do their thing before the movie, and maybe, you know, in between movies. But it's a very, obviously, a very popular form of storytelling.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because there are some horror hosts out there that still do the theater hosting. Like one of the hosts I drew in the New Fears Till New Year's, Dr. Bob Tesla, he's one such host that he does a lot of hosting out of just local, you know, local theater and stuff. So I think that's pretty cool. And to me, that's, you know, deserving of me doing a portrait, because, you know, it's all the same. It's all the same genre, whether you're on TV or, you know, doing spook shows, that type of thing. It's all interrelated, and it's all, you know, comes from the same place. So it's pretty cool.
I was lucky enough to do one. I've done one live show. And Lord Bloodrod does them, by the way. He does live shows. He's one of those. He does it all. He does live shows. He does the horror host shows. He's hosted trailers. He's hosted radio.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. He's a lot of fun. And he's got a great audience too. I mean, he's like I said, he's been an influence on me, and he's a good friend, and you know, he's been a big supporter since the beginning as well too. So, you know, it means a lot to me, because here's the thing, you know, when you first interviewed me, I was just a guy in my room 3 months down from doing this crazy project to fill up until October of the next year. And, you know, now I've expanded out. I had a metal fabricator, Tony Perez, who reached out to me, and I started doing work with him. And he's, you know, made a lot of connections and taken it to other levels where, you know, I mean, he's got us doing stuff. You know, I got to do a lot of events this year. I got to do an event with him for first annual Emilio Rivera Golf Tournament. We got to open Paul Tuttle Sr.'s restaurant down in Tampa, Florida, and present him with a metal piece. We presented Emilio with a metal piece. We got to do an event in Sanger in September, where we presented Tom Flores, the Raiders coach, with a piece. And then just about 3 weeks ago, I got to go down to went to L.A. to George Lopez's 14th annual golf tournament and presented a piece to George. So, you know, from a guy sitting in his room 6 years ago just trying to get a little recognition, it's been an amazing experience, and I owe it all to everybody that, you know, supported me since the beginning and has, you know, appreciated my work and driven me to continue it. Because sometimes, you know, as an artist, it gets frustrating, and sometimes, you know, I think, yeah, man, I just, you know, quit this. But ultimately, it's for everybody out there, and, I thank everybody out there that has supported me, because it really means a lot, you know, to have such a great fan base and great followers. So love everybody out there, man. They're all great. So
they love you too. Believe me. I have never met someone who didn't like their caricature, that didn't love the work you do for others. It's deeply, deeply appreciated. It really is, by the community, and by fans of horror hosts and horror movies.
Well, yeah. It's funny because I'll meet people sometimes and they don't know me or my work, but then finally when I show them a piece of work, they go, "Oh my God, I've seen your work before." Mm-hmm. Yeah, you probably have, because it is out there, and you know, it's out there in a lot of ways that I don't even realize, and it's cool, you know, that. You know, it is out there, and people are recognizing the style, and, you know, whether they know it's me or not, you know, it's out there, and I just plan to take it to new levels and keep doing more and having more fun with it. My day job now keeps me busy, but I moved to the Midwest, and I moved to Des Moines, Iowa. And so now I work at a place called Broken Arrow Apparel. I do apparel design during the day, and one of their clients is Joe Bonamassa, the blues player. So I've done a couple T-shirts for Joe Bonamassa. And, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I, you know, now I get to actually be a working artist during the day, and then do my stuff at night as well. You know, so it's all good.
Keep the fun coming. We've come a little ways. I've come a little ways since you know we did our last interview together. No longer working with Jack, as you know, but I've really, really, really embraced the old time radio shows. Dave's been a fan of this for 40, 50 years, right, Dave?
Yeah, not wanting to say exactly how old I am, although I am old. Actually, when I was a teenager, I fell in love with old radio programs. And Inner Sanctum was one of the first ones. Fibber McGee and Molly and Inner Sanctum were the two programs that really got me interested in old-time radio. And what a coincidence, huh?
Well,
we have an
Inner
Sanctum tonight.
Well, I'm excited about this one because you guys chose the right one. So, you know, this
well,
is,
that was
kind
of
awesome.
Deliberate, sir. That was in honor of yourself. That was in honor of yourself. What we did is, you know, first I was doing a talk show, and Dave was kind of helping out a little bit. And you know, we thought, well, let's just play an old-time radio show here and there. And then the thought hit us. It's like there's tons of this stuff. It's in public domain. There's an inexhaustible supply. We've been at this over 5 years now, and we haven't repeated a show except a couple of times we've done War, because we always do War of the Worlds on October 30th, but we've done different versions of it. But we really haven't repeated any complete shows, and we decided to approach it just like a television horror host, except with radio shows.
I think that's awesome.
I mean, there's a few people, they'll do a little intro, they'll do a little outro. You know what I mean? There's a few people doing that, but I don't think anybody's doing quite what we're doing here.
Yeah, we split up the show and then talk a little bit in before and in between and after. And a lot of times we do try to give facts about what's going on with the show or the producers or the actors, you know, or the network or whatever. We find different things to hopefully keep it interesting and a bit, if you pardon expression, educational at times.
Yeah, it's usually an accident, though.
Well, I grew up as a kid, you know, listening to a lot of the old radio programs, because I remember, you know, at the public library back in those days, you know, they'd have cassettes and everything that you could go in and check out. So I'd listen to a lot of the old radio programs.
Our high school public library, our junior high school library is where I was first exposed to Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
Oh, that's such a great one, too. I understand why you guys do it every year, because it's so phenomenal, and the history behind it, you know, is incredible as well.
Yep. And one of our, and Dave will tell you, one of my favorite radio horror hosts is from Inner Sanctum Mysteries, which we have an episode tonight called Death, appropriately enough, Death is an Artist. And Dave,
yeah.
We got anything on this one today?
Yeah, we do. This is, believe it or not, this is your buddy, your favorite, Raymond, once again tonight. So this is not long before he went into the service and left it and actually never came back as host. He and Hyman Brown had a disagreement, and they never got together again. Terrible.
Oh, no.
That happened. But Hyman Brown, who created so much of the great radio, not only during the Golden Age of radio, but even as Dale called it, the Silver Age of radio, which really the 70s was with Mutual and Sears Theater and the Zero Hour and the CBS Radio Mystery Theater and some other local things or Southern California things going on. It really was kind of the Silver Age of radio, trying to get the people back to radio. Hyman was good at holding a grudge, and he held it until Raymond was gone. Not that Raymond didn't have plenty of other jobs. He hosted Tales of Tomorrow and some other things, and also acted in a lot of radio programs as well, but never quite got back to being the prominence he had as Raymond, host of Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
And I think he embodies the modern horror host, that sarcastic, sardonic approach, great puns, the dark humor. I think you'll like this one, folks. Brad, if you want to stick around, each segment, we got it chopped up into three pieces today. Each segment's about 10 minutes, and we hope you're back with us after part one.
Oh, yeah.
Great. This one is from
January 23rd of 1945.
We'll be back.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries, starring Lee Bowman. This is your host, Raymond. Welcome to the Inner Sanctum. Come in, won't you? What are you staring at? The walls. Well, you know that old saying about walls having ears. Well, these walls have eyes. and a nice assortment of fingers and hands. One of them has a heart, but can't beat that. Don't mind me, friends. In my old age, I'm getting to be a bit of a gore.
You're getting to be a crotchety old bachelor, that's what.
Who said that? Oh, Mary Bennett. Hello. Tell me, Mary. Do you think I should get married? You know, I used to have a girlfriend, but she threw me over. She was a vampire. She said I wasn't her blood type.
Oh, Mr. Raymond, please. What a silly thing to say. More and more, I'm convinced that what you need is a wife. I'd just love to see the way a wife would handle you.
Would you send me a wedding present, Mary?
I sure would. I'd send you a big supply of Lipton's noodle soup. You know, I'll bet your wife would appreciate that. My goodness, in the old days, it took a woman all day to make a pot of noodle soup. Whereas nowadays, it only takes a jiffy. That is, when you use Lipton's noodle soup mix. But Lipton's has got the same homemade taste, believe you me. It's got the same chicken-y flavor. Yes, sir, a hot plate of Lipton's noodle soup is a grand welcome home for the whole family. One whiff of that savory Lipton's noodle soup, and folks feel relaxed and ready for dinner with a rousing good appetite.
Well, now, that's a very pretty picture, Mary. Which reminds me, our story tonight is about one of the fine arts, murder. It's called Death is an Artist, an original tale by Frederick Matho. And our star is from Hollywood, Lee Bowman. Soon to appear with Rita Hayworth in the Columbia Technicolor picture tonight and every night. So, curdle close to the fire and turn the lights down real low. By the way, if you have a little spook or two in your home, looking behind your shower curtains before turning on the water is the courteous thing to do. Otherwise, you might be dampening your... Now let's get on with our story.
I'm Stevie, a reporter. I'm what's called a police reporter because I hang around police stations for my stories. But tonight, I'm the best reporter in the world because I've got that kind of a story that's only given to one writer in 1,000, once in a lifetime. This story begins with the end of a man's life. Yesterday, an old man living alone with his 5 cats on an abandoned barge under the Brooklyn Bridge cut off the heads of 4 of his cats, then expertly slit his own throat from ear to ear. At 6 o'clock on the morning we got the flash about this old man, I was playing cribbage with Mike, my police pal, at the station house squad room. Burke, the desk captain, was snoring his head off. Okay, Mike, there it is. Go, 121 points. That last run made it.
You're the luckiest jerk, Stevie.
We're both lucky. Not a call the whole night.
Sure hate to drive out to anything in this blizzard. Grace, 84th Precinct, Brooklyn. What? Yeah. Wait, say that slower. You haven't seen him in a week. His cats ain't around. Oh, but lady. Huh? Blood in the snow. Well, that's different, sure. Yeah, okay, thanks.
What's up, Captain?
Some dame passes an old barge down the foot of the bridge on her way to work every day. It says an old bum lives there with his cats.
Don't tell me I gotta rescue a cat now.
No, this coot talks to her real polite every morning. But she ain't seen him in a week. Today she goes to look close-like and finds blood in the snow near the door. So
we go see. Well, probably went south for the winter. Coming along, Stevie?
Yeah, but I don't like it. Burke mentioned cats, and I hate cats. And I hate people who keep cats.
This is it, I guess. Come on, Stevie.
Hey, look, Mike. There's a snowman.
So what? Haven't you ever seen a snowman?
Yeah, but look. That's not an ordinary snowman. It's a beautifully sculptured head of a woman. Made out of snow.
Ah, come on. It's cold. Let's get inside this scow here.
Hey, open up. Open up there. Open up inside.
There is blood out here, Mike. Look. See? Here's where the woman's footprint stopped.
Okay, Sherlock. Help me bust this door.
Oh, what's the matter with you?
Look on the floor.
Holy mackerel. One, two, three, four cats with their heads cut off. And another one. Alive.
Hey, where are you going? I told you I can't stand them dead or alive.
One of them clawed me when I was a kid.
Stevie, get a load of this over here on the bed. He did a good job. From ear to ear.
He had done a good job. He was naked to the waist and his hairy torso was bathed in blood. His head lay to one side and was nearly severed at the throat. His mouth, a strangely sensitive mouth, hung foolishly open in the middle of a matted mass of beard. But it was his eyes that stirred something inside me. They were coal black agates that smoldered with defiance, even in death. They seemed to carry a message only I was meant to see. I turned away and stumbled over a small wooden box. It contained clay fragments. An impulse seized me, and I carried the box outside.
What do you want that box of trash for?
I'm not sure. I just felt I ought to take it along. Mind?
Just junk. These bums collect the screwiest stuff. Come on, I'll drop you off at your paper. You'll get a news beat on this anyhow.
Okay, Mike. Thanks. I'll call you later to see if you identify the old bird.
All right, Stevie. Hey, here's that box of junk. You want it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Mike. I wrote the item. All we could learn was that he was Ivan. No fingerprints on record, no relatives, just Ivan. So he stayed just Ivan to a 250,000 readers and to the police. But to me, he was a man who had not yet died. I poked through the rubble of clay in the box, and I was about to throw the whole mess out when a time-blackened metal tag caught my eye. It was the kind of tag used to mark paintings or statues. It read, Agatha, January 2nd, 1924. 20 years ago, today. And below that was a name. Ivan Thorne. The name jangled a bell in my memory. It frightened me. It fascinated me. I rummaged in the box some more. A hunch grew to certainty. Ivan Thorne had been a sculptor. Here was a fragment of clay, a nose. Here, part of a chin. Here, an ear, a woman's ear. And the snow image of a woman's head came to mind. Why did Ivan Thorne, a sculptor of obvious talent, do a head of a woman named Agatha in clay, then on the same date, 20 years later, as a bum, reproduce it in snow and slit his throat? I found the answer in the yellowed clippings of the newsroom morgue. The story of Ivan Thorne was filed under Murders Unsolved.
We'll return to the Inner Sanctum shortly. You're listening to Erie House Radio with special guest Bradley Beard.
Hello, I'm still here. I'm enjoying the show. It's excellent, by the way.
And so much of the show is not just about the Inner Sanctum, but the host itself. I mean, I think that draws people in. You know, when you have the shows like The Witch's Tale and the Hermit's Cave, you know, it was as much and the Mysterious Traveler was much about the host itself, almost in many ways, that drew people in, as it was necessarily the stories. I know that, you know, watching the horror hosts growing up, you know, you wouldn't care what was going on during the movie usually. You wanted to make sure you were awake for when they came back to do what they were going to do.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and I just can't express enough how much I just love Raymond. He's just like the epitome of cool.
Well, he's got a very unique tone in his voice, somewhat reminiscent of Vincent Price. You know, it's very unique. I like the tone that he exudes, very dark and you know, keeps you expecting to, you know, what's coming next.
And yet he's jovial about his dark approach,
yes.
which is one of, I love him for that.
Well, you know what's funny is I kind of wonder, it reminds me of the way Zacherly approached it a little bit, too. I kind of wonder if Zach maybe listened to a lot of Inner Sanctum when he was, you know, younger.
It's quite possible because you can see any horror host's influence on, you know, a younger generation or the next form of media.
That's true. That is very true.
I was just wondering, were you self-taught or did you study for a while or a combination of the two?
Well, as a kid, I was self-taught. I didn't actually have any art classes until I got out of high school and moved to Las Vegas. I took a few, but majority of what I do is self-taught until I got into the computer graphics. About 10 years ago, I went and got my computer graphics degree, and that's where, you know, it took me to a new level to where I was able to do the piece a day because, you know, at the time I was working on the phone, so I was able to sketch while I was on the phones, which was a godsend because I never would have been able to do it otherwise. And then at night I would, you know, bring the work home, scan it in the computer, take it into Illustrator, and then, you know, finish it as a portrait that night. So that allowed me to be able to do more than a piece a day every day. But again, I was sleeping, you know, 1 to 3 hours of sleep per night for 13 months. So just imagine that.
No. I would have been the crabbiest man on earth.
Oh, God. I was so tired. You know, the sad thing is I was drinking 2 5-hour energy drinks every day just to get through my day. It was
it was an experience. Give yourself a stroke.
I could never do that again. But you know, the cool thing is I did it. I made it.
Yeah.
I set a goal. I went from, you know, October 1st, 2014 to October 31st, 2015. I actually accomplished it. I didn't think I was going to be able to. And, you know, it's now there. It's done. And I don't think artistically I'll ever be able to top that. You know,
But looking back on that now, do you think it a little, I know I've done some things and I say, that was completely insane what I did. Do you look at that as one of your insane moments?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding me? I look back on that and go, what the hell was I even thinking to begin with? But I'm glad I did it. I really am. You know,
we all are.
Yeah.
We all are and appreciative of you doing it. Absolutely.
Indeed.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I haven't got a lot of response back from people on the New Fears Till New Year's, you know, because I haven't done any interviews or anything since then. So, you know, I can't wait to kind of, you know, see what, you know, I know, like Dave, you know, I got to include you in there, man. I had a lot of fun with your portrait. If you notice, there's little devilish touches in there. You have this look on your face of just, you caught me the moment after I did. You know, cause Mike's is funny because Mike's is screaming. You know, Mike's got it, you know, like he's in a scream, but yours just has this look on, you had this look on your face in that photo. I loved it. The minute I saw that photo, the one I'm going to use.
It's a perfect smirk for me. Yeah, absolutely perfect smirk.
I prefer to call it a leer. Leering Dave.
I keep that here in my office whenever I'm creating or anything. It's got it right up here, and it just really that for me, that was a big moment of being a host. It was when I finally got my portrait done. I can't tell you, I can't speak for everybody, but when others got it too, they had to feel the same way that I did. You know, that you've done all this work and you've done all this, and then look at what is here with you. You know, you got this likeness that an artist drew of you, and it sometimes takes your breath away looking up there and seeing me leer down at myself here. You know,
I was thinking to myself, how the hell did I rate? What the hell?
When I did yours, Dale, I wanted to capture that old spaghetti western feel to it. You know, I wanted to capture that. You know, just the I don't know, and I think I nailed it because I love it—the bat on the hat, the way you know you had the bat on the hat. And I just it's one that I really look back on and I had a lot of fun with too, because you know, that was right about the time you interviewed me the first time, so you know.
I felt like Dave. It was just like, well, and again, who the hell am I? How did, what? Okay, thank you.
And, you know, there are always comments from whomever. You know, I saw it coming out of Mummy and Monkey and things like that, that, you know, and just the comments, they felt such pride in being selected as and being portrayed by you. And it just,
thank you.
I can't really explain it, but it is, you know, it's just really
see
cool.
What you did. See what you did there.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny because when I did Vincent Van Dahl this time, he was in the New Fears Till New Years. He really wrote this phenomenal. If you go back and look at on my Facebook page, what he wrote on there that, you know, the horror hosting genre, there's not a lot of rewards. And he said, one of the most incredible things is, you know, and to me, it's like, it's very humbling, but, you know, to be drawn by me. And I was like, what? But, you know, it made me feel really good that, you know, I mean, that my art is held in that kind of esteem and regards, you know, with the community that, you know, it makes me feel good. That's why I enjoy doing it, because you guys dig it, you know, and it's fun and it's cool.
Yeah, it is. It just means a lot to so many of us, and it's just hard to describe. It really is.
Well, thank you. And it's funny because I met Dave first at the Horror Hound convention with Mike. And I remember I was talking to you guys, and I said, you know, I'm going to draw you guys one day, and it took a while. You know, if I say I'm going to draw you, I will eventually get to it, but, you know, and so I was really glad to be able to include you guys in this last round.
What's funny is I think you were about to start it, and then you got a chance to do some kind of big art show. And so, like, you were ready to start us, and then all of a sudden that happened. But I'll get back to you right after the art show. But it was a big showing, I think, of some of your artwork, and you were working on a couple pieces for that. So
yeah, I was working on something at the time. I can't even remember. It's, you know, so many brain cells ago, and sometimes I forget. But I always, you know, I always try to follow through and get people's portraits done. And I do plan on in the next year to a couple years, I do want to do another horror host run, though, because there's some really cool personalities out there, and it's just, God, I mean, it's so cool to tap into the horror host community. It's just, you know, again, like I said, there's just a uniqueness about, you know, it's like stepping on fresh ground that's never been stepped on before, you know, as an artist, to be able to draw, you know, to be able to imbue life in my way in these portraits and to be able to put my twist on people's images, you know, like yours, Dave. I mean, it's very, I had a lot of fun with it. The color palette that I used for you and Mike, they're, you know, they're complementary. And I think the two pieces just work beautifully together. And I had a lot of fun with those. You guys gave me great photos, and that's where it starts. If I get really great photos, then the portraits, you know, I can really capture the personality. And I think that's what I did with you guys.
The problem with my photos is I'm in them.
Yep, there goes another camera. Yep.
We better run off to part two of Inner Sanctum.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be back in about 10 minutes. Death is an artist. We'll be
After
back.
I'd read the story, I marched into GC's office.
Hey, what's up, Stevie? They show you the Brooklyn Bridge again?
No. You read the item on the old guy I found with his throat cut?
Sure, sure. Cut off his cat's head, then his own. Unidentified. Good item.
I know who he is. Was.
Yeah? Story?
Story. You got time to listen?
Shoot.
Well, this begins in a sculptor's studio off Washington Square on a stormy night long ago. Ivan Thorne and Agatha, his wife, were having words.
For the last time, Agatha. Are you really going through with this divorce foolishness?
For the last time, yes. I'm tired of living from hand to mouth. I'm tired of your stupid statues. I'm tired of your stupid cats. I'm tired of you.
All right. I'll give you the divorce. You can marry Greg Stevens. He'll give you everything you want. But Horace stays with me. I want custody of the boy.
The court will decide that.
Agatha, I've been working on that head of you for a year. It's good. I think the museum...
Oh, that thing? It doesn't even come close to looking like me.
Of course that head isn't you. It's what I remember you as when I first met you.
Ivan, let go of me. You're hurting me.
All right. I'll let go of you. But I'm going to finish that head, Agatha. And you're going to help me.
I will not...
You'll get your divorce. Only if you agree in writing. Depose me one day each month for 6 months. I must finish it.
6 months, hmm? And what about Horace?
He's away at school all the time. We'll let the court decide a decent arrangement.
All right, Ivan, I'll do that. Give me that pen. Here. I, Agatha Thorne... agree to pose for a sculptured head by Ivan Thorne on the first day of each month for 6 months. Signed, Agatha Thorne. There you are.
Now, get out. Get out before I break your neck.
Gone. But I'll see her again. 6 more times. That's all I need. 6 more times.
Like this Ivan guy is working up a neat little cat catastrophe.
Mr. Raymond.
Yes, Mary.
I got to thinking about that snowman they found. Did you ever make a snowman?
Oh, sure, and I cut off his head for a souvenir. Kept it in the icebox over the summer.
You're teasing me, Mr. Raymond. But you know, when I was a child, we used to spend all afternoon making a snowman. And then we'd go in the house for supper with our cheeks red as a frost apple and with a real country appetite. The house was so warm and cozy. Yes, and filled with all the exciting smells of good cooking. You know how children are. They play in the snow and then come in ready to eat you out of house and home. And I've got a grand suggestion for these winter night suppers. Lipton's Noodle Soup Mist. It's such a heartening dish. Thrifty, too. Costs a lot less than canned soup. Yes, Lipton's noodle soup just seems to belong to folks young and old who've got a healthy appetite and a yen for homemade, chickeny-tasting soup.
Mary.
Yes, Mr. Raymond?
Mr. Bowman is waiting to resume his part of the young police reporter, Stevie. That's right. You remember, Stevie told his editor that Ivan was divorced by his wife, Agatha, 20 years ago. And how the events that followed turned the sculptor into the tired old bum he was when he slit his throat under the Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, Stevie, did Agatha get her divorce?
Yes, and the court gave her custody of their 6-year-old kid, Horace.
Hmm.
She married Greg Stevens, and according to these clippings, she kept her agreement with Thorne. She posed for the head he was doing over so that he could finish it.
The first day of each month for 6 months, huh?
Yeah.
How'd he take the divorce and losing his kid and all?
Beautifully, so everybody thought. It got to be the talk of the town. The three of them, Agatha, Greg, and Ivan, seemed to get along fine together. The Stevenses were frequent callers at Thorne's studio.
Oh, I say, Thorne, why won't you show me the head you're making of Agatha? It isn't fair, you know.
Well, not till it's finished, Greg. You wouldn't appreciate it as it is now.
It really is good, Ivan. When will you finish it?
Yes, Ivan, when?
I want to finish it on New Year's Day. That will be the last time you need pose, Agatha. Can you make it that day?
Well, I'll just have to, won't I?
Yes. At 3 o'clock?
At 3 o'clock. Come on, Greg, darling.
Good night, Ivan.
Good night, Ivan. My goodness, 6 months goes by so fast, doesn't it?
I gave them 6 months. One day it's over. One day is the last day she poses for me. One day I'll finish that head. I love her. And for 6 months, 6 centuries, she belonged to that idiot. She took my son from me. You can't hear me, Agatha. Can you? This is you and Clay. You can't hear me. Everybody thinks it's wonderful that Ivan Thorne is such a good sport about it. I fooled them all. I fooled you. Yes. You.
Was out of his mind, Stevie, the Ivan guy.
Sure, but with a madman's cunning, he disguised it well at that point. Only his cat knew it, I guess. New Year's Day, 1924, was a howling wintry day. Neighbors later testified to seeing Ivan's massive frame, coat flailing open in the wind, eyes staring, unblinking, as he turned into his building. It was the last time they saw him. In his studio, Ivan kicked his door shut and began talking to Agatha's statue, as he'd gotten into the habit of doing now for some time.
I'll set the table by the fire, Agatha, just as we always did. You like that? And I'll set a place for little Horace. Oh, I know you don't want him to come here, but we'll just make believe, huh? Agatha, I must pull myself together.
Happy New Year, Agatha. Come in, come in.
And the same to you, Ivan. Oh, let me get to that fire quickly. I'm frozen. Why are you bolting the door?
The draft rattles the door.
Here, give me a coat. Now, how about a bite? By the fire?
Why, Ivan. How quaint. Just like old times, hmm?
This is the last time you'll come to pose. Have you minded living up to our agreement?
No, Ivan. You've been very decent about it. But tell me, why are you so set on finishing the head you're doing of me?
Have you ever seen a human skull, Agatha? Ugly thing. Long after that pretty head of yours becomes a skull, the head I'm making of you will live in ageless bronze. That's why I'm so anxious to finish this work.
I see. Well, shall we start, Ivan? Ivan, you're not working. You're just staring at me.
I'm studying the line of your neck, darling. It amused me.
Well, hurry, please. I've sat here for 2 hours now. I'm tired.
I'll be finished soon. Then you can rest, darling. Then you can rest.
Ivan,
looking at me as though... Ivan!
You've moved your head again, darling. Here, let me show you. There. So. Just like... this. Don't move, Agatha. My fingers are loose on your throat. But in a split second, I can sink them into you tight. Like this.
Don't.
I've loved you more in these few months. You've been away from me than I ever did before. I'll always love you. But if I can't have you, no one else can.
Ivan, you're mad. You can't.
I gave you 6 months with that fool. Because I wasn't sure. I thought I could get over losing you and the boy. But I can't.
We all thought you would.
Resign. No.
Whoa, that was an abrupt ending to part one, two of Death is an Artist from Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Gee, I wondered what's happening there.
I don't know.
I'm loving it. That's awesome.
Yep. Each week here, we're here on Friday nights starting at 8:30 for a 2-hour show. And then Saturdays at 6:30. And we usually do 3 shows on a Friday, and either 2 shows or maybe like a longer show like CBS Radio Mystery Theater on Saturdays.
Yep. Gives us quite a collection of what we've been able to do with this. It's so I'm trying to look at my hotel because so far to date, not including what we did yesterday, we've done 965 complete shows and 574 clips of different shows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we've only scratched the surface, Brad. There is so much of this. I mean, there's over 1,000 CBS Radio Mystery shows alone that are available.
Wow, that's incredible. That's so cool.
And it's a little less limiting, like, you know, like, and believe me, nothing against the guys who are doing the traditional television horror host thing where you're hosting a movie. But there's if you're staying within the guidelines of public domain, there's so much more available in terms of the big stars. Sure, there's a lot of Lugosi public domain. There's a couple, maybe with Karloff, Peter Lorre, a smattering here and there, Vincent Price, a couple of those. But there's tons of this stuff with all the great stars.
Yeah,
it's true. It's true.
The only thing we can't seem to find a lot of, for reasons maybe we can imagine, there's just not a lot of Lon Chaney Jr.
No, there's not.
I guess that's not what he preferred to do at night.
Yeah. Wasn't in Broderick Crawford's party planner. Oh, well, those were the days.
That would be an interesting hunt, though. There might be some snippets out there that are just, buried someplace that we're just aching for someone to unearth.
Yeah, you would think with all the command performances and all the GI journals and things like that he would have made a few appearances. I mean, it's good for him and good for his movies. And he did one Inner Sanctum, which seems to be lost forever. And,
really?
Yeah, that's one we couldn't get a hold of. And then there's the one that he appeared in Abbott Costello episode.
Yeah, I think we had a segment of that, did we not? Here on this show, Dave.
We did.
We did a tribute to Lon Chaney. We had a few other things. We took some sound clips from, like, Spider Baby, which is largely thought to be public domain. it's one of those on the bubble. But we did a few things, and it's really hard to find any audio of him. I don't give up hope on those things, though, but just like great works of art sometimes resurface that had been missing for a long time. Sometimes, recently, one of the great old silent comedies resurfaced overseas. Somebody found it. And I'm still holding hope that, like, London After Midnight gets found.
I was just thinking the same thing, Dale. I'm thinking, you know, before I die, as you were saying that, I was thinking, God, London After Midnight, that is the one I want to see. I want to see it if it lives up to, the, you know, all everybody's recollection of what it was supposed to be. Is it that great? You know, but it's got to be. I mean, you know, just the image of Senior with those teeth and his, you know, oh my God, that to see that movie in the theater back in the day had to be terrifying.
Yeah, and the closest we can come is the 1935 Lugosi remake of it. In fact, same director, Todd Browning, I think.
Yep, yep, he did both. Yep.
Wow.
And the title of the Lugosi film is escaping me now. It's the one where he addresses the audience.
Mark of the Vampire.
That's it. Mark of the Vampire, 1935, if I'm not mistaken. Really, only eight years after London After Midnight. That film was one of the first where there was a huge controversy in the media about it being used as an excuse, if you will, or a reason, if you will. For a violent crime.
Yeah, the guy said that the image of Lon Chaney in his makeup unhinged his mind so that he went out and killed somebody.
Yep.
Well,
I believe that happened in England, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, the thing is, we've seen everything now. So, you know, but imagine being 1931 and going to the theater, what was it, on October 31st or 30th, 1931, and being one of the first people to see Frankenstein back at that. I mean, my God, that had to just scare the heck out of people. I can't even imagine not ever having any expectation for that movie back at that time and what you would think coming out of the theater seeing something like that.
Oh, absolutely. And Chaney Sr., the great unmasking sequence in Phantom of the Opera, how absolutely bone-chilling that must have been.
Yeah, I mean, to have seen those classics for the first time back in the day must have just been, you know, incredibly exhilarating and terrifying, and, you know, because nothing had been seen like that ever.
Yeah.
No, and that's where we have to thank people like Forry Ackerman, who did get to see London After Midnight. He did get to see premieres of Frankenstein, King Kong, all the 30s classics.
Well, that's what's great about seeing interviews with him and Ray Bradbury and stuff where they talk, because you know they were great friends. And they talk about their experiences of seeing these movies. So even though we can't imagine, we, you know, living vicariously through their stories, you kind of get an idea of how it must have been.
Yeah, and it's a thrill to listen to either of those gentlemen and part of the Bat Pack, as they call them, I guess.
Yep.
Just to hear the stories and share, you know, that which we can only imagine.
Well, I don't know if I ever told you. Just one thing about Forry was when I met him, he actually let me – he had only one original – Gogos left, and I got to hold in my hand the cover that Gogos had done with the ghoul, Boris Karloff as the ghoul.
Oh, yeah, that was in the 30s, I think.
Yeah, to see the original art, Gogos' original artwork, and hold it in my hand and go, wow, this is amazing. So, yeah, Forey was a cool guy. I mean, he had stories for days, and it was truly an honor to meet the guy.
Yeah, I think the very first Goulardi Fest he was at, and it was a thrill for me, too. I got to meet him briefly just as a fan, which I'm not much of a fanboy. I'm not, like, shocked or intimidated by celebrity, but there was something about meeting him that took me aback.
Well, I feel the same, and I got to go through the acrobats, so I got to see a lot of
that. Oh, you lucky devil.
I mean, the King Kong armatures.
I'm jealous.
Oh, it was amazing. Because it was so cool, because in his basement, he had the original King Kong armatures. He was actually wearing his Lugosi ring, and he had his cape. I mean, you know, like I said, he had one original Go-Go's left at the time I met him, but just the house was full of just so many amazing, you know, like Earth versus the Flying Saucers. He had the thing that Harryhausen had built up with the flying saucer hitting the Capitol building. It was amazing to see that stuff.
Truly amazing stuff. We have just enough time to wrap up Inner Sanctum. Def is an artist. A few moments to chat on our way out for the evening as you prepare for Gar the Ghoul after our show. Here is Def is an Artist, the conclusion.
We all thought you were...
resigned. No.
Even now, I don't know if I want to kill you, Agatha. I'm not sure.
No, you don't. Think of her. Miss Summer.
I am thinking of your little fool.
Oh, Greg. Greg, help me.
Greg.
You've got the nerve to speak his name here.
No. No. You aren't gonna.
I did it. But you made me do it. How beautiful you are. Dead. Look at this clay head. Agatha, see, I was wrong. You're much more beautiful. I've changed my mind. I don't want fame. I don't want a statue. I want you. See, Agatha, I've broken it, smashed it.
Greg Stevens should die.
He did all this to us. I'll
go see Greg. That's it. But I want to be careful now. I must make Greg suffer. I have it. Yes. He must know that he too has lost Agatha.
That's some yarn, Stevie. He actually strangled Agatha, huh? What happened then?
He left his studio and called at the Stevens' house a little after 6. Greg Stevens and young Horace were the only ones there, except for the butler. He testified that Ivan quietly asked to see Stevens alone. He had a bundle in his arms, covered with a piece of black velvet, when Gregory greeted him.
Ivan, well, glad to see you and Happy New Year to you. But where's Agatha? She was supposed to be with you.
She'll turn up shortly. Said something about a girlfriend she had to stop by for.
Oh, I see. Well, come on in, Ivan. We can have a glass of sherry while we wait.
Thanks.
Put your package down somewhere on the table here.
Thank you.
Did you get a lot done today on the head, I mean?
Yes. I've finished it.
Oh, good. Say, that wouldn't be it in that box, would it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is.
Well, good heavens, man, let me see it. I've been kept from all this long enough now that it's finished. I'd love...
Till Agatha gets here. I'm going away for a while, Stevens. Before I go, I want you to tell me something. Do you love Agatha? A lot, I mean.
A lot?
I worship her. I adore her. You know what you did to me when you took Agatha and my boy from me?
Well, the choice was hers.
I'm glad for my sake. I'm sorry for you. But I thought you were resigned by now.
Resigned? You poor fool. I've lived a life of raging hate for you.
Ivan, sit down.
You don't have to be sorry for me anymore, Greg. You can start feeling sorry for yourself.
Thorne, what are you driving at?
Everything comes out even, Greg. Come over here.
What's in that box?
Come closer, Greg. Here. I'll take the cloth off. See for yourself.
You fiend. You beast, I'll kill
you. Hey, doesn't it, Greg? Hurts to lose, Agatha. Doesn't it?
I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Oh, you won't. Get away from me. You won't kill me. I won't kill you. We'll both live. You remember.
Thorne didn't kill Stevens?
No, G.C. He knocked him out. They found his footprints in the snow along with the kids. He must have stopped to say goodbye.
What a story. He slit his throat this morning as a bum on a barge.
Yeah. Took his cats with him. The clay fragments I found in that box on the barge were all that was left of the clay head of Agatha.
Nobody even found out how he got away or managed to stay hidden for 20 years?
No. That's his secret.
Well, write it up, stupid.
I can't. I won't, G.C. You can't print that story.
The devil, I can't. Where's this Greg Stevens? Where's Horace, the kid? Find him.
Greg Stevens died penniless and insane a year later. His kid was raised in an orphan asylum.
Well, find the kid. Now, let's see. He'd be about 26 today. Maybe he doesn't know any of these things. What a scoop. Get busy.
Look, you can't print this story. Why do you think I didn't write it up and hand it in? I feel sorry for the kid. I was raised in an asylum.
A story's a story.
What do I have to do? Draw you a diagram, G.C.? Why do you call me Stevie?
Well, because your name is Stevens, I guess. And, good heavens. You don't mean it.
Yes. My name is Stevens. I never use my first name. I don't like it. It's Horace.
That's right. You're Horace Stevens.
Yes. My father was Ivan Thorne.
You have a little sculptor in your home, Better take his modeling away from him. Might grow up to be a bust. That's enough to give anybody the creeps.
It certainly is, Mr. Raymond.
Mary Bennett. Say, didn't you like our story tonight?
Well, it was exciting, all right, but why don't you tell stories about normal, happy people? Of course, folks like that never get murdered or anything, but interesting things happen to them. Nice things, too.
Like discovering Lipton's noodle soup, huh, Mary?
Why not? Lipton's noodle soup is a good way to brighten up a meal, and good meals are a mighty important part of life. So, folks, maybe you've tried other envelope soups. But if you've never tried Lipton's noodle soup, you've got something real nice ahead of you. Because Lipton's is the favorite noodle soup of them all.
Our moral for tonight is don't drive alone. If you have a car, lucky you, form a carpool. Then, if you should have a flat tire, you'll be among friends on that cold, cold highway. Fun, huh? And Uncle Sam says join a carpool, too. He's not kidding. He says your carpool will help save gas and tires, so look to it, Max. Yes, the this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Net of Cobweb by Elizabeth Sanxay Holding. Oh, yes, and you won't forget to look for Lee Bowman with Rita Hayworth and the Columbia Technicolor picture tonight and every night. Well, now it's time to say goodnight until next week at the same time when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup again present another Inner Sanctum Mystery directed by Hyman Brown. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Folks, I got...
There you go. A little bit of Inner Sanctum. Death is an artist. Now, Brad, we have a little tradition we do around here. Normally, headed up by Gar, but although Raymond had a moral, we often here at Erie House have a moral. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. Sometimes an artist can give a killer presentation, and sometimes just a killing.
I'm sorry.
I feel better now. I feel better.
Lighter on my feet. Want to thank.
Is that weight that doctor wanted me to drop? I just dropped it. Anyway.
Oh, my. I painted a picture, all right.
Before you head over to listen, or watch, rather, Gar the Ghoul on Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul, in just a mere 4 minutes or less, I want to thank our regular listeners, Fogsbane, good old Bob, and a couple others that were in and out, whose name escaped me right now. GGSI Paper was in for a bit. And most importantly of all, we want to thank our special guest tonight, Bradley Beard.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me on. I love being back, and it was a blast, and that was a great episode of Inner Sanctum, by the way. So thank you. Thank you very much.
And Do we have time for that special outro?
Yeah, okay. Normally around here, okay, we wrap up with the outro from Frightenstein from Vincent Price. However, in honor of you, good sir, thanks again for stopping by. We've got a special outro from Vincent Price that I hope that you'll like.
Nice.
As soon as I find it. There we go. Good night, folks.
You know... It's such a wonderful thing to be an artist. I don't have to go any place. Places come to me with a little bit of paint, plus a little know-how. You can own a tree, you can own a cow, if you know the joy of light and shade. You can own a joy that will never fade. And that is why I'm monarch of all that I survey. I've got a rainbow working for me. The world and all its wonders beneath the Milky Way beg me to take them, beg me to make them mine each day. I own the Taj Mahal and a castle in Cathay. I own the sunrise over Capri. With just a brush and a palette and a little box of paint, I've got a rainbow working for me. Just a touch, touch here, and a dab, dab there. If you'll just stand back, it's Trafalgar Square. With a little gray smear and a little brown smidge, though it may look queer, it's the Putney Bridge on a rainy day. And that is why I'm monarch of all that I survey. I've got a rainbow working for me. The world and all its wonders beneath the Milky Way beg me to take them, beg me to make them mine each day. I own the Taj Mahal and a castle in Cathay. I own the sunrise over Capri, with just a brush and a palette and a little box of paint. I've got a rainbow working for me. I've got a rainbow working for me.
There you go. Good night, folks. Hey, there we go.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Very fun.
Yep, we're still being recorded. This is like our little after party. If you want to hang around for a bit, or if you got to go, that's fine. But sometimes we chat for a little bit after the
show. Oh, I'm still here. Yeah, that's cool. By the way, thank you for that, because I'd never heard that before. I don't think I've ever heard Vincent Price sing.
Oh, gosh, he's sang a few things. He even put out an album with some poetry and songs. This one, however, was from a TV show, and it was a reenactment of a song he did for a musical, believe it or not.
That was very cool.
He also did one. I'm sorry, go ahead, CW.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know that Vincent Price did quite a bit of theater in his younger days.
Yes.
And he did another one I'm thinking of is he was on the Red Skelton show with Boris Karloff, and the two of them came out in a golf cart and sang The Two of Us.
Really?
Yeah.
And then didn't Red Skelton join him with that?
Then Red Skelton joined him, and it became The Three of Us, right?
Oh, my God. I'd love to see that.
Search it out on YouTube.
I did find you there, and I sent off the Spaceship One. I'll find that clip and ship that off to you, so you don't have to play hide and go seek for it.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I'm trying to find that musical he did the song that we just heard from. There may have been a film version. There may not have been.
Well, Vincent was quite the art collector, as you know. Did you ever see that commercial he did for Sears?
Yes.
That's a really cool one, too.
I found that one on the Internet Archive, actually. It's a lengthy commercial, because I remember them selling art pieces in the big stores back in the day.
Yep.
And he was a very cultured man. He was into, like, you know,
culinary
classical
arts, cooking.
And cooking, yep.
Cooking, yeah. He did a couple of cookbooks at least.
And what endears me to me the most, which tells me what kind of man he really was, is I still haven't finished it. I had to put it down, but he wrote this book about a dog named Joe, and it's just about his life during the time he had this dog.
Oh, wow.
And you could tell he was an animal lover, and you could tell that he could understand animals. He knew their body language. He knew this dog, and he loved him. It was just a kind of a mutt and a freewheeling dog. It really roamed a bit at night, but always came home, you know? It's a very endearing story.
Well, we all love our animals, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
It's funny because my daughter's dog passed away last year, and about a month afterwards, you know, she wanted another dog. And we went to a shelter and we found, and I didn't know it at the time. I thought, I didn't know what the breed was. I thought I was getting a German Shepherd mix. Ended up getting a purebred Belgian Malinois. Oh, my God, she is the smartest dog I've ever seen in my life. Just beautiful. But the sad thing is, this dog and her brother were dumped out in the desert. And when we got her, she was so skinny. The bottoms of her paws had been burned off because, you know, the Vegas desert gets a little hot. She'd been starved and she'd been abused. And it's so sad because, now she's such a great dog, but occasionally she gets into a little mischief. So, you know, I have to kind of scold her a little bit. And it's so sad because when I do, I don't even have the heart to get mad at her. But when I kind of scold her a little bit, you know, she'll kind of close her eyes like she's waiting for the hit to come, like somebody's going to hit her. And it just It just breaks my heart to think that this intelligent, loving, caring animal could have gone, what she went through, you know, before we got her. But, yeah, you got to love your animals. You know, they're just, you know.
Yeah.
I think they make us better humans.
They do. You'll never find a human as loyal as a dog will lay down its life for you without thinking about it. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
And that's like Trinity, my Belgian. I know in a second if anybody ever tried to do something, she'd be right there. I know that, you know. And
yeah. Yeah, we just got a puppy 4 months ago. My wife always wanted Lassie, so we got a rough collie.
Nice.
Such a challenge because they're smart. He's something of a lazy lump, but when he wants to play, he wants to play. And they're stubborn. They're very stubborn. So they're a challenge. You have to keep them engaged mentally, probably even more than physically. They're that kind of dog.
Well, that's the way with my Belgian, but it's funny because I started training her, and literally in 3 days, I had her trained for stay, stop, come, go, and all the – it was amazing how quick and how smart these dogs are. But when you see the videos of them on YouTube, I mean, you'll see these dogs, you know, walking wires and just doing the craziest stuff. That's why the military and everything use them. And I just can't believe somebody would dump – a dog like that out in the desert.
I do not get people.
Yeah, I trained my cat for over a week, and I finally learned what it wanted me to do.
that's cats. That's cats.
That's hilarious, man. I love that.
Dogs have jobs. The cat is like, no, you have the job.
Yeah. It's true. Yep.
You're working for me, pal.
Yep.
It's the way it works.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of all the different, you know, when you have different animals and stuff. It's just, you know, the personalities come out. Everyone's got a different personality and their own intelligence and their own way of thinking and doing things. It's, you know, so amazing.
Gentlemen, I hate to interrupt, but unfortunately I must be away. Mr. Beardley, it's just a pure pleasure making your acquaintance. Again, just love your work. Absolutely outstanding.
Well, thank you, CW. It's been a pleasure meeting with you and talking with you as well. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, again, until next week when we all meet, I bid you a fond farewell and adieu.
Take care, CW. We'll see you hopefully during the week for Halloween week.
I hope to be there, absolutely.
Fabulous.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Thanks, CW. Bye.
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 We get the nicest people on here, the nicest listeners, nicest callers. And CW, we just kind of absorbed her into the Erie House family. She's been just such a good contributor. She seems, and we don't know, she's kind of mysterious because we don't really even know who she really is. Extremely bright, extremely knowledgeable, and has brought so much to the show. We're like, why don't you just be here regularly if you care to, you know?
So she does try to join us on Saturdays when... Because Gar fills up the schedule pretty quickly. And so on Saturdays when he's not here, and she is just so knowledgeable about movies and people. It's
and
just unbelievable to me.
Amazing.
The mystery woman.
And she is. She's a woman of mystery.
Did you have any favorite comic book artists? You know, we mentioned a lot of the more traditional, like, the Basil Gogos, Vallejo, and Frazetta. But did you have any comic book artists that you're particularly fond of?
Well, you know, of course, Bernie Wrightson. I was very much into Barry Windsor Smith, Jeff Jones, Michael Kaluta. Neil Adams was another big influence. Oh, my God, Batman 251, you know, the Joker's five-way revenge, you know, where Joker's standing over Gotham and has Batman, you know, chained to the playing card. I mean, that was one of my very first comic books ever. So, yeah, there's the classics, you know, the classics. But then some of the newer artists like Kelly Jones. Kelly Jones was another one that, you know, of more of the modern artists, and Mike Mignola, they have a huge influence on my style. And it's funny because I was mentioning to Kelly Jones one day, you know, I was, you know, messaging him on Facebook. And I mentioned, you know, that one day I kind of realized that the shadow style that I have in my artwork is really very closely, in a way, I think I kind of borrowed it from him unconsciously, because he does a lot of that in his work. So, yeah, I mean, comic artist Frank Miller's another one that's a huge influence on me. You know, yes, comic art is... You can see my style is completely, you know, inspired by the comic books.
I was a Marvel guy, almost strictly, at least when I was young. I broadened out a little bit as I got older. But I think my two favorites, I mean, I did like John Romita, but my two favorites were probably Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko.
You know, I was just going to say the same thing because, you know, the Marvel stuff was a big influence on me as a kid. Steve Ditko, love his Spider-Man work. And, of course, Jack Kirby, man. I mean, you know, Jack was the king. And you know, so, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, again,
when
big
you look,
influence on me as well.
When I look at the first, like, say, 30 issues of Spider-Man and watch Ditko's art develop, it was very basic at first. And, again, it had that pop art, that edge to it that I really liked. Steranko was good with that.
Steranko was phenomenal. He's another one. Actually, you know, as you were talking about Ditko, you know, Steranko came in my head. Then, of course, you mentioned it. Get out of my head, Dale. But, yeah, Steranko was – I mean, his Captain America, those issues he did with Captain America and Nick Fury – big influence on me as well. I mean, his work is phenomenal, yes.
Yeah, didn't he dabble with Doctor Strange and did some of those amazing magical scenes, you know, with his style?
Well, Ditko's Doctor Strange was mind-blowing to me as well. Oh, my God. You know.
And again, that was just something that developed as he went, because Spider-Man got more defined, I think, as he went along.
It's true. I mean, just great stuff. I mean, you know, the thing is, that whole run of Spider-Man all the way up to almost issue 200. I mean, yeah, you just had phenomenal artists, because you had Gil Kane and Romita Sr. And, you know, then you had Ross Andrew, and each one had their own style, but that Spider-Man was just phenomenal back at that time.
He was my fave, probably because of the TV show.
Yeah, I remember the TV show too. Yep.
Dave and I were talking about too. Art is real important in presentation and what have you, but so is music. Shows that seem kind of corny, but they had the greatest music, like Lost in Space. You had that great John Williams music in there. The Danger music in Johnny Quest, you know?
Oh, Johnny Quest, yeah.
Although that had good art and stories, too. The music was really catchy. And there was one other thing that escapes me now, but it was another good example of shows that might not have been as good without the music.
Well, you know, and even like the TV themes back in the day, you know, I mean, they have, I mean, now I can't even tell you, I couldn't hum a theme from any modern TV show, but, you know,
yeah,
stuff from the 50s,
yeah,
60s, and 70s, I mean, you know, there's so many that are just in your head immediately when you think about it. Hawaii 5-0, you know, who doesn't know that? And, you know, so, yeah, the music was an integral part
And those songs actually charted as well. You know, many of those songs.
It's true. Well, remember that scene in Twilight Zone, the movie, where Dan Aykroyd is, you know, they're going back and forth with the TV show themes? Yeah.
Yeah,
that was a great scene. I know Dave does, but Brad, do you know who Puddle's Pity Party is?
Yes, I do, actually. He's out in Vegas. Yes.
Oh, my God. I just saw the funniest thing. I think it's pretty new that he put out. He just did Gilligan's Island.
Really?
To the tune of Stairway to Heaven.
Really? That's classic.
And
I got to
And you know
that
what
out.
That deadpan of his, you know, in his getup, it just works. It's hilarious. Such a talented man.
Yeah.
What a great set of pipes that guy has. Jeez.
I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, Mike Mace has been to a couple of his concerts, and he will not ever speak a word before or after or during the concert. The only thing he'll do is start singing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's completely silent except for his singing. And that's part of, I guess, his mystique or whatever you want to say. But that's what he does.
You know, and I think that was the fun of the horror hosts, too, because for the longest time, for me at least, no one knew the ghoul's real name. No one knew who Goulardi was, you know, unless you really, you know, reading in the newspaper and then, oh, wow, okay, so the guy has a name. I wonder where he is. Oh, I'd like to meet this guy, you know, when you're a kid. There was a mystique, though, it was kind of more fun when you didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I wish I could have really, I mean, you know, I grew up, you know, in the 70s, so, you know, I had Chuck Akery, but I mean, I wish I could have been around in the late 50s and during the 60s, because the hosts at that time were really unique. I wish I could have had, you know, a host I could have associated from the classic days to be able to watch, you know, Zachary every week. Oh, my God, that must have been mind-blowing.
I fortunately got to just barely see the tail end of Goulardi. I was very, very young, though, so it's a very vague memory. I remember it was From Hell It Came with the Walking Tree Tabanga.
Nice!
Yeah.
Rip that up.
And I believe he had an afternoon show called Laurel and Hardy and Goulardi.
Yeah.
And he would show the old comedies. For like a quick afternoon show.
See, that's great. That's you know, that's awesome
then,
to have memories.
And then in Cleveland, we had the Ghoul, we had Big Chuck, and meaning Ann Houlihan or and Little John.
Right.
What's his name?
Superhost.
Oh
yep.
God, how do I
yep.
forget him? Briefly, there was a guy named Mad Daddy.
He did three episodes, I think, didn't he?
Maybe six.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't long. It was a real short run because he was just too wild he wanted to do the show upside down. I think he did one, and like the callers were complaining. And they said it was kind of a danger to the equipment and whatever. And he's like, fine, hang me upside down then. And I'll do it upside down. And the guy, and I don't know if you've heard any recordings of him. But what an incredibly quick wit this guy had. He was a rhymer, rapper almost. He was like the original rapper in a way.
There is a clip of him out there that you can see.
There's a few clips. He did a record. It was called The Joker or something. He's telling a joke. It was kind of morbid. Little clips from his radio show introducing songs and so forth, and just his patter. Wow, crazy, groovy, gravy, you know, just, whoa, how does his mind work that fast? And he screwed up by thinking it would work in New York, and it was just a local, it was a Cleveland thing. He was as big as Goulardi for a time.
Yeah.
And he ended up taking his own life because he never captured that success again.
Part of the problem was, from what I understand, he came back to Cleveland for one of the concert type things. He was ended up being host and found that fame and excitement all over again. Went back to New York and couldn't take what New York just didn't even get him.
No, they didn't get his humor at all. Makes you wonder if Ghilardi would have worked in any market.
I don't know.
I know Vampiro would have. She had a broad appeal. Oh,
yeah, well, couldn't help that.
Yeah.
But I think it's amazing that Ohio embraces the genre in the way they do. I don't think there's any other state in the United States that embraces the genre like, you know, the Ohio audience. And I think that's pretty cool.
So much of it. In addition to that lengthy list, keep in mind, Big Chuck was on for 40 years.
Oh, I know. Incredible.
And then
when you look at Fritz the Night Owl, who was on for 17 years, seven nights a week.
Yeah, he's a cool guy,
by the way.
He is.
I got to meet Fritz, yeah.
Yeah, we have too. Dave and I have too. He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
I had a three or four part interview with him. You say, hey, Fritz, how are you today? And you don't have to ask another question. You know, that's how easy an interview Fritz is.
Yeah.
He's cool.
He just has so much to say, and it's such a history to draw from that, and he's very engaging as a speaker. So yeah, you just let him go.
Well, he is, and that's, you know, he's another one like you know, when we were at the Horror Hum, they got to meet, you know, Dave, Mike, Jack Bone, just a ton of hosts at the show, but I got to meet Fritz, and I sat there, just sat next to him and talked to him and just got to hear the stories, and it was incredible. It was such a great experience to be able to meet him, you know, and he had such an appreciation for the portrait I did of him, you know. I mean, he really dug it, I was honored, and you know, but he was such a cool guy. I mean, he is the epitome of cool. He's badass.
Yeah, he is.
Those
pipes he has, he could read the phone book and people would listen enthralled. I mean,
it's true.
If there was such a thing as a phone book anymore, but yeah.
I remember meeting him at Jack's wedding, and we're commiserating about how many bathroom breaks we had to take. Like, I know I'm getting old now. I was reading with Fritz about how many stops we had to make on the way to the gig. Funny. That's good times. Well, Brad, thank you so much for stopping by.
The honor's mine, man. Thank you for having me on. It's great to talk to you again. And I mean, you know, it's cool because it's been 6 years, but it's like it's not, you know. It's just, it's great to, you know, we get together and talk, and it's awesome. So thank you so much.
We have one other honor for you. We have one other honor for you. Our guest of honor always gets to leave when we finish his part by introducing the great Jimmy Durante so that we can go out for the final time of the night. So it's all up to you to introduce the one and only.
Here he is, the one and only.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Thanks again, Brad.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. We'll chat with you soon. Thank you.
What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the thing, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Oh.
radio?